Welcome to another episode of The Trap Door with me, Sophie Black. I am recording this under a duvet because it has nicer acoustics than in my echoey home. And this is in an effort to compensate for the slightly dodgy sound in this upcoming episode, which I shouldn't really apologise for because I think it's really only my radio pals who'll notice it. So hands up. Yes, there were sirens going past every few minutes, and yes, we did record it in a 27-foot room, but I hope I've made it sound delicious enough, and my guest very much helped in that regard, Margaret Caborn-Smith, the prolific comedy actress and writer who has been seen in such things as Catastrophe, The IT Crowd, Psychoville, Peep Show, Fresh Meat, Miranda, and lots of Radio 2, including all the Penny Dreadfuls plays and John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme, and I mean, just a lot of things. And she is also just one of the most brilliant human beings I was about to say I've ever met, and actually I will stand by that I have ever met. She's just brilliant, and I hope you think so too. Of course. I mean, actually, do you know what, I don't care if you don't, because I'm pretty locked into that mindset. So apologies for the slightly poor sound quality, which, as I say, I think only geeks will notice. And yes, I hope in some ways at least the echoey nature of the room will just add to the slightly Halloween-y quality to it all. And watch out for the slightly spooky ident from my children. Margaret started first of all to talk about her spookiest of stories.
My daughter, we thought, was jaundiced. She went the terrible sort of yellowy, orangey colour.
When she was a baby.
And, yeah, when she was a baby. And I took her to the doctor. And the doctor said, "Do you feed her a lot of carrots?" Yeah, and we'd actually turned her orange through over. I know, it sounds like a joke, doesn't it? We'd fed her too many carrots.
Are you serious?
I think it's carrots plus sweet potato and squash or whatever. But we, yeah. Can you imagine the embarrassment of that, of having to go, right, I'll put some greens in next time then.
But you don't want to put too many greens in, do you?
Well, I'm not turning it, turning it green, that would be even worse.
That's extraordinary.
It doesn't sound real, does it? But it's funny, she said, she was just like, no, this isn't a jaundice, you know, she's way too active and whatever, knew it wasn't jaundice. It was like, but she was like, she did accept that she was orange, you know, she wasn't going, that's just the colour, because
But this is presumably... But it's a, you see, you can see why you do it, because it's a very good thing to puree, isn't it?
Yes. Well, we had these little ice cube trays. Yeah, and they'd done, Dan went mad with pureeing.
Yeah.
And I was too lazy to, you know, mix them up particularly.
So it's his fault.
It's his fault.
Good.
I'm blaming him.
Good.
But I was the one who had the humiliating encounter with the doctor.
Ah, so it's, 50-50.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite sort of Halloween-y.
Pumpkin. Very good.
So... take me back. I want to know about your life pre-children.
Well, it was a whirl of parties and premieres. I mean, obviously not, but it's sort of, when I think we got together when I was 26 and Dan was 27, so that's proper late 20s.
Yeah.
We were spending a lot of time in Spanish bars, having horrible tapas at 1 a.m. after, you know, radio recordings and... out a lot, probably out more than we were in, and we're both quite messy, so the flat wasn't that great to be in. but and then We went on holiday, and we never, ever, ever, and still don't really go on holiday, but we decided to go on holiday to St. Ives, and we had quite a weird time. And I remember building a sandcastle on my own on the beach while Dan watched, and I was in a sort of winter coat with gloves. And I remember going to an arcade and we played some drumming games and stuff. And I honestly think, I don't know if I spoke about it then, but I honestly think we were both going, I mean, we should have a child if we're going to do this.
You know, if you're going to make a sandcastle.
Yeah, sandcastles and arcades. Yeah, so this sort of holiday thing.
Right, yeah.
Of, I mean, we did go out and get drunk and have nice meals as well. But it did just suddenly feel like, yeah, like there was someone missing, like that there was a next step to be had.
And how long then did you decide to go for it?
Oh, God, well, it was really quick, I think. I mean, a couple of other things had happened, and Dan had had a show commissioned, which was helpful. You know, I remember choosing my hospital because it was near Television Centre, you know, that sort of thing. And then after I got pregnant, it was sort of decommissioned. Yeah, and so we were like, oh, well, we've done this now, so we're going to have to go ahead and have this baby, even though our future is no longer as secure as it was. But in a way, there's always something, isn't it, that triggers it. And it's only once you have a baby that you realise it makes no sense to wait for the perfect time. It just doesn't, absolutely no sense. It doesn't matter how well off you are. I mean, obviously, the more secure you are, the better. But I think you can drive yourself mad with that. And actually, you manage if you have a... I actually met an actress whose baby slept in a cardboard box by the front door.
Wow.
And she wasn't an asshole, you know. She was like a nice, sensible woman, but she's like, we don't have the space. We will do, you know. We're aiming to move out once she grows out of the cardboard box. But it was just like that's the situation we're in. But we're going to have a baby, so that's that.
Yeah.
And then I got pregnant very, very quickly. Like, I think it was probably the second time I'd ever had unprotected sex in my life. I'm a very good girl. And I went to give blood, and they have a thing on the form saying, are you pregnant? And I hesitated because I knew I'd had unprotected sex. And then I thought, it's just so unlikely, that I put no. And then I gave blood and I fainted on the tube and had to be taken to A&E. And I had a urine sample done at A&E, and then nurse came. It was good. It was a nice nurse rather than the man who'd smelt very strongly of meths.
Who was taking your blood?
Who was taking my blood, anyway. But she came in and said, smiled and said, it's positive. And I honestly was like,
HIV?
For what? Yeah. I was thinking, not HIV, but I was thinking hepatitis. I think she seems quite jolly.
She's quite jolly about it, so it can't be HIV. It must be
She said, so relieved that it was hepatitis. So she said, no, you're pregnant. And I was pleased, luckily, because otherwise that's a real... I mean, it was a weird way to find
what
out.
Weird way to find out.
In the basement of St. Thomas's Hospital. So, okay, and I rang Dan outside, and the first thing he said was, but I haven't learnt German yet, which is...
Is that the very first thing he said?
That's the very first thing he said.
Brilliant.
But I actually get that, because I think there's a loss... When you suddenly go, okay, life's changed for good now, you do... I remember thinking, I've got to learn not to use a knife when I'm eating spaghetti. I honestly had that thing because I was like, that's not what grown-ups do. And I don't want my children
thinking
that.
People.
Thinking that a knife and fork is an acceptable way to eat spaghetti.
Mamma mia.
Yeah.
No way.
No way.
Yeah, it's funny. I fainted. Yeah, we're in a very noisy, echoey room with...
It's good. It's like the hospital. It's like the casualty department. Yeah.
There'll be sound effects throughout. I fainted a lot when having blood tests while pregnant. And the first time I did it, I was quite shocked because I was very, you know, I wasn't scared, you know, it wasn't sort of, my brother used to be really scared about having injections and all that kind of thing. And I never was. So I was kind of busy showing off and saying, no problem, don't have any problem with this at all. And then they put the needle in, and literally sort of minutes later, I just collapsed and was sick and sort of felt really sick. And David was there and was really sweet and was kind of going, oh, it's all right, and blah, blah, blah. Next time I had to have a blood test, I had the blood test, and the woman said, "Do you want to lie down for it just in case?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay, right, fine." And
yeah, the last time I gave blood, they asked me to lie down. I was like, "Oh my god,
don't be ridiculous!" Yeah,
but then,
exactly.
Yeah,
but then
turns
actually,
out.
Turns out you need to.
Yeah.
And I looked up, and David was videoing it. And I was going, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Was he
going
to put it on YouTube?
He just said, "I thought you might want to know what you look like when you faint."
Oh my god!
I was like, yeah,
"Who are you married to?"
Yeah, exactly, a monster.
My daddy's not a monster.
So you found out you were pregnant.
Yes.
And you told Dan, who wished he'd learned German.
Yes.
Has he made any roads into...
A bit. He did the classic Duolingo for a bit. The thing is, his mum is German. This is why it's a big deal. And it is. My grandmother was Spanish, and I do feel terrible that I don't know Spanish. I do think, wow, what a waste, mm-hmm, you know, of a resource. And he can understand it pretty well, but yeah, he still doesn't speak it. But I think that there are more important things, it turns out.
And I wonder if he'd got to that point without learning it, would he have learned it?
Mm.
I don't know.
Oh, absolutely not.
No,
absolutely not. I don't think it was... It was just... He knew it was ridiculous when he said it, but I think it's just funny, the things that occur to you. And because with us, it did happen very quickly.
Yeah.
And I was 32, so it wasn't quite at the stage... I mean, when I had my second child, I was 39. And by that point, we knew all of the awful story. We knew everything that people were going through. And I was much less like, having a baby, isn't that weird? You know,
you sort of get
a bit more sensitive about it and think, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. There are people who are really struggling and want to conceive and hate you for getting pregnant quickly all of that, you know.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was just... But what's weird about it is I feel like I didn't get the chance to really want it to happen. And I'm not sure. I think both of us were a bit like that. It was like, oh, okay. We had discussed it, luckily. Because do you know what? Years ago, I spoke to someone who said, I said, oh, well, I've kind of got to persuade Dan before we, you know, think, but we've got to have some conversations and work out whether he really does or he doesn't or whatever.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, just put pin through the condoms. And I was
someone
like,
said that to me.
What?
Yeah.
But apparently this is what...
Yeah, I know.
But what sort of... relationship,
but also,
is that? It's insane.
Yeah, and also, what are you... I mean, I grew up in a single-parent family.
Mm.
So I would never dream of doing that. Not that you know, I didn't have a good childhood or whatever, but like... But yeah, you
tricking someone into it. And
really
then you would
dodgy,
never be
it?
Able... You would never... If it didn't work out, you wouldn't... You've got no leg to stand on.
And also, you can't pull the "they're your kids too" and you wanted them too.
Yes,
card,
exactly,
ever.
Exactly. Which you do have to, which we all love that
but,
card.
Yeah, exactly. My God, it's the only card
too.
I have.
We start every morning with that.
We do. Just remember that your children too.
You wanted them too.
Yes, exactly. So, a friend of mine recently described that thing about the German.
Yes.
It just really chimes with me because I think that you, especially at that age, probably still at that age, at 32, you sort of see your future as being a series of paths that you can still go down.
Yeah.
So you can still, you know, live in Africa and, you know, and live a kind of very outdoorsy life working with animals. And then you can finish doing that and you can go and live in France and become fluent in French.
Yeah.
And then you can... you know, maybe retrain as a lawyer.
Yes, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, there are all these paths ahead of you. And the older you get...
Yeah, they narrow.
The
yes,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So suddenly German, learning German and becoming, you know, fluent German speaker and, you know, whatever.
It's gone.
And that's maybe just growing up and not necessarily...
Yeah.
The thing about having kids or anything.
No, absolutely. Well, so both of us were doing the writer-performer thing.
Mm.
But we didn't have a mortgage. We weren't married. So we've really gone nuclear on the whole commitment thing. You know, there isn't anything bigger than having a child. And I think there was that was a bit of a a shock. You're going, yeah. Just that realisation, oh, we are narrowing our options now completely. Yeah. And I did sort of vaguely propose as well after I got pregnant. I said, do you think we should... And I said it like this. It wasn't a, darling, will you marry me? Yeah. I said, do you think we should get married? And Dan said, let's do one expensive thing at a time. At which point I thought, we're never getting married because as far as I'm aware, children don't get cheaper as time goes on. But yeah, there was a sort of, well, this is it then. We're making a real statement to everyone here. And in fact, the biggest compliment I had, we had rather, was a friend of Dan's came round in the very early days. And he was fortunate that he came when Amy was just sleeping in a little, you know, vibrating chair in the corner. And we just had a chat about other things. And he said, this is really weird because you're just like the same, but there's a baby in the corner. Yeah. But I thought, oh, that's really nice, actually, because... Yeah. And obviously, that's not true all the time, you know. There are other times he could have arrived where it wouldn't have seemed like, oh, we're totally taking this in our stride and we're still talking about
DVDs. But also,
you know,
that must
DVDs.
Have been so nice to hear, because so nice. You Massive don't necessarily relief. Feel the same.
No.
And so just to go, it's like, you know, we still recognise you.
Yes, we still
nice
see
people.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
It must have been really nice.
Exactly. You know, it was, as I say, his biggest compliment. Yeah. I had. It's like, oh, okay, that's fine. They can see that I'm still in here.
Still here somewhere, beneath all the sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Because you're both writer-performers, I always saw you as being the kind of epitome of a perfect arrangement in that you kind of only take jobs, you know, when the other... So if the other one's working, the other one is kind of out of action. And you kind of split that, you know. Like, I think there's one point where it was Dan in Hollyoaks or something.
Yes.
And then he'd finished and you went, all right, it's
my turn. Yes, bye. And Oh, and when it does work, you are, you know, you come close to feeling smug, I tell you that.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't often work. I mean, there are loads of times where I remember... The good thing was, when he was doing Hollyoaks... there were two jobs, I think, that I went up for that I really, really wanted. And I was still devastated when I didn't get them, but the only good thing was I could think, at least I don't have to worry about the child, how the hell that would have worked childcare-wise, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the best thing about having children. Is there something? No, they're a nice consolation for when work isn't going well. Wow, what do I sound like?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
But yeah, that was...
And how does that work between you? Do you tend to have, is it fairly balanced? Like, you both get offered the same amount of work?
Well, what I like to say is neither of us are successful enough to be a problem. There are definitely times where I think, you know, where you look at couples who one of them, their career massively takes off and the other, you know, and the other one is left literally holding the baby. Yeah, yeah. And I do think that's a massive, I can really see how that would destroy a relationship. Either way, really. But as I say, that hasn't happened, and I like to think that we would manage. And you know, Hollyoaks is a big is a big thing. It was 15 months he was in Liverpool a lot of the week, and I was pretty depressed. But weirdly, there are other jobs that he's taken that's taken him away where that hasn't been as problematic. Actually, one of the things about that is that when he went to Hollyoaks, my daughter was 3, I think, and she's much better company. You know, as time goes on, your children become much, much better company. And I don't feel as resentful and lonely because your evenings in,
are quite fun.
It's not just scrubbing your child and putting them
and
in
kind
a
of
cot.
Sitting. Yeah, I mean, which is what it is for me.
Moment. It gets better.
Oh, God.
It gets better.
And then I go to bed at sort of, I mean, last night I went to bed at 8.
Oh my God.
And that means once I've put the kids to bed at 7.
Yeah.
Then that is quite
sad.
Bleak.
No,
I'm going to say
that.
Sad. Sounds pretty bleak. But yeah, it's fine.
Well, sometimes sad, sometimes bleak.
Sure.
You're really living the dream.
Quite a loser. Yeah, that's right. I am.
No, but joking aside, it is true that sometimes it feels sad and sometimes bleak. Yeah. Sometimes it's absolutely fine. Sometimes it's definitely I get to go to bed now.
And
you
I don't care.
It's a treat.
I don't need to. I remember when I was younger, I mean, if I didn't have plans, which was very rare, I have to say, on a Friday or Saturday night, at least one of them, I would be pacing. I'd be really furious.
Yeah.
Like a complete moron. You know, so Yeah, so I don't have that anymore, which is good, which is lucky.
You've always got company at home.
Yeah, exactly. crying babies. Mummy.
My friend told me an amazing story about... And she's a very good mum. She's one of these people that's a bit annoyingly on top
capable.
Of everything. And, you know, but also fun and lovely
right,
and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
She woke her 3-year-old up to remove a slug from the front room because she couldn't bear to do it herself. She said, "That's bad parenting, isn't it?" I was like, no, I get that.
3-year-old.
I'm sure he was fine.
But he would find that really exciting.
Exactly. That might be his first memory.
Yeah, exactly. That's really funny. So how has having children affected your creativity?
I don't know. And I have been thinking about it a lot. I was weirdly worried when I was pregnant the first time. I was really, really oddly worried that I was going to lose all of my ambition work-wise. And of course, afterwards, I didn't. I wanted to go back to work sort of immediately. I remember being on the ward and thinking, I don't know what to do. Can I go and do a job where I know what to do?
Yeah.
But I was thinking, even if that had happened, who cares? Because that's happened then, and then suddenly you don't care about work. So it's fine. It's fine to have children and then go, actually, I don't care about work. I don't want to do it anymore. Somehow, I think it was a pride thing. Somehow I thought, I don't want to be one of those women.
Who doesn't care about work.
Who has children and stops caring about work. But actually, more power to anyone who feels like that. I mean, I had a post-it note next to the bed during pregnancy with Bridget Christie and Lucy Montgomery written on it as a reminder that it was possible to have children and keep going.
Now, that's funny because that's the second time. This is episode 4 and it's the second time Bridget Christie has been
Bridget
mentioned.
Bridget Christie was doing a one-woman show when her baby was 6 weeks old in Edinburgh, full Edinburgh run. And not only that, I saw her 3 weeks before that. I'm actually shaking with rage. Yeah. 3 weeks or something before that, doing a full read at the BBC in front of all of these people with her baby in the corner in a Moses basket. And the reason I'm angry is that I just was not at that
not in
level
a position.
Of
no way.
Yeah, and with all of that, she's brilliant as well. She's not weirdly cold or she does.
Well, she was. She's not. No, exactly. She's not some kind of sort of
robot.
Aggressively ambitious.
Yes,
kind
exactly.
Of, no, not at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She did. I loved when she did the show A Bic for Her, which was the winner.
Yeah.
Was it A Bit Fair that was the winner?
Yes, it was.
Of the Edinburgh Prize. She won Edinburgh. She would come out at the end wearing a rucksack, which seemed like an odd thing to do. But I happen to know she had that rucksack on because she had a very quick changeover. She had to sort of run out of the venue. She didn't have time to go backstage, run out the front door of the venue ahead of all of the audience to be handed one or two children at that point to then take over.
It was two children by that point, I think.
Yeah, and she is just, sort of
amazing.
A miracle.
She's really brilliant. In fact, I'm going to ask her to be on this.
Well, no, but don't ask her, Sophie, because she's...
Make her.
She's not normal. So it's not.
She's
it wouldn't
not
be
representative.
Fair. Exactly. I don't want Superwoman Bridget.
Well, maybe we'll have some kind of freak. We'll do some kind of freak special.
Yes.
And
Bridget on. Okay.
As a kind of okay.
No. To be fair, she's probably the one that people will want to listen to. But it's like, how did you do this?
Yeah.
That was interesting. But why do we talk about something else now?
I worked up until I was 9 months pregnant. I remember doing a radio show and having to mark in the script when I would have to start getting up to get to the microphone because it was taking me so much longer than usual. Yeah. And then I did another radio show when Amy was 6 weeks old.
And how was that?
Radio is different because there's no line learning. I hadn't written it or anything. And it went well. It was weird. It was halfway through the day that one of the other people said, "Oh, you've had a you've had a baby, haven't you? And I was like, yes, yeah, yeah. It's been like the biggest thing in my life. You think I look slightly less fat than when last time you saw me. But I sat with a breast pump in the toilets for my entire lunch hour and I cried all the way home. Oh. So let's not, you know, sell it as to, hey, it was fine. I did it. Yeah, I just popped it out and I...
And cried all the way home because...
I don't really know. I think I was just very overwhelmed and it was probably, I mean, it was the longest I'd been apart from her and I was breastfeeding and, you know, so leaving at 9 a.m. and coming home at 6 p.m, that sort
of... Yeah, it was quite a big thing. Yeah,
on
yeah.
the sleep deprivation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the boobs that sort of crackling under the weight of milk.
Yeah.
But I did it and I, you know, it was good. It was really good having things in the diary to go back to and things that I thought I'm probably going to be all right. I also did a TV show where I just about managed to fit into the costume that I'd left from the previous series. When she was 2 or 3 months. But I remember going, I'd left, the wrap party was when exactly at the 12-week point when I was allowed to tell people. So, you know, so that was nice. So we left at the end of this Katie Brand's big ass show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'd left on the sort of, you know, showing everyone the scan. Everything, oh, congratulations. Oh, yeah. And then the next series began and I came in and I went into the makeup room and I looked at all three women in there who were all mums and I said, nobody told me. And they all just went, oh, yeah, sorry. Nobody went, oh, what do you mean? They were like, yeah, sorry, but you can't, can you? No. You can't tell someone who's pregnant and they're all excited what it's actually going to be like. And one of them said, I mean, I think I was in a fog for 6 months, basically. And I was thinking, yeah, it's a good,
but
good
I
definition.
Think people do say that, but it doesn't mean anything until you're there. Don't you think?
Like, I don't know. No, I remember holding my tongue with pregnant, with people who are actually pregnant.
Right, right.
I sort of think, oh. And unless they're really good friends and I think they can
take they can handle it.
You sort of think the last thing you want to do is tell them how awful the early days are because you're so scared of the birth and you're dealing with...
Do you know what? I feel like I had... And I had my first baby at 39 and I felt the opposite. I felt like everyone painted it. Like...
It was
I was
terrible.
The last person I knew to have
well,
a child.
Well, that's the difference, isn't
so
it?
You've everyone got
too much
went,
reality.
Yeah, so always everyone went on about what a fucking nightmare it was. Yeah. You know, how my hen, I was 8.5 months pregnant, something like that. And people talking about someone likening it to Vietnam, you know, the birth and all this kind of thing. And then another friend of mine whispering
the
to
birth.
Me. Yeah, just saying, oh, there'll be blood, you know, don't, just take as many drugs as you can. It's horrific. It's going to be a nightmare. And then another friend of mine just whispering in my ear, it might be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was lucky that it kind of was okay. Yeah. It's like, why am I having all these, you know, really, I don't know, I think maybe...
Your friends are awful?
No, maybe my friends are assholes. Or maybe it's the difference, you know, because also I was going to say, when you had Amy, you wouldn't have had many other friends with kids.
No.
So that must have been quite difficult as well.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, really different. Luckily, my sister had a baby that was 6 months older. So that was just perfect. Yeah. So she'd been through it all and was remembering.
Cause, could remember
cause
it
even,
still.
Yeah, even with my little sister and then definitely with my mum, they were like, I don't know. I don't know. I'd be asking them really specific questions and they'd be like, I can't remember.
I couldn't remember between Zach and Sadie. That was a year.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think because it's the day by day thing.
And just
so
extreme. Brilliantly your brain bins it. Because
You
really
don't need it. Well, you need to focus on the next thing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So how, other than that, how did it differ having Amy with then having Tom how many years later?
Six years later. Yeah, and that's a really weird thing about gaps. You do get a bit obsessed with gaps, you know, the gaps between your children. And sort of the truth is that it took me that long to recover from the first one and I wasn't sure I wanted to do it again.
Yeah.
So that was just how it worked out. But my friend Miles, he's got a kid the same age as my eldest and a kid the same age as my youngest and had three in between.
Wow.
So it's sort of five in the space of 5 years, basically.
Yes.
And I told this to someone the other day who had two small children, and she burst into tears. And then we were really laughing at her because I was going, I'm so sorry. But she was just going, no. She just kept saying no.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so sorry.
And I was like, well, presumably they were all right with
it. They were okay with it.
You wouldn't be. I mean, I wouldn't be, you know. So
well, that's the thing where I think...
You don't know.
People go... Because I had mine really close together. Mm. And I know people who have, you know, say three or four kids. Well, like...
Yeah,
like really close together. This guy does. So, you know, yeah. And I think I did that. I did that once, i.e. I had a child, then I had another child in quick succession. But some people, knowing what that's like, then do it again. Now, I haven't done it again.
Yes, yeah. Yours I can sort of cope with.
Silly once.
not silly as well, but also, Sophie, I mean, I hate to say it, but you are getting on a bit.
Yes, well, that's true.
So
yeah,
that
yeah,
is
yeah,
the,
yeah, that's the reason.
Difference,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, but I don't think I actually answered the question that you...
The question I asked was...
How was the second
Yeah, how
pregnancy?
Did they differ, yeah.
The pregnancy was very similar. I know, and actually this is just complaining for the sake of it almost, which I'm prone to do. But no, because I know people have terrible pregnancies. People are properly bedridden for 9 months and all of that. So it wasn't like that. But it was... The sickness never went. I was sick. Yeah. You know, I felt sick the whole time. It was like being hungover the whole time. Yeah. And I was... pretty miserable. I never got that glowing thing. I was pretty miserable, solidly. The second time, I knew what was coming.
Yeah,
and that was much, much easier. I was just much less scared the second time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then...
And did you feel as sick?
Yeah, yeah, annoyingly. Right, yeah. I know, and people are always like, no, if boys and girls, and it's all bullshit.
Yeah,
it's like,
you
know, that whole thing of, and I really believe this. So you, with boys, you carry them on the front of your body. It's just what a load of nonsense.
Yeah,
Why do we? I think we want to tell ourselves things because you know if something makes sense and it can be a bit scientific and you can.
I think also we're terrified of. Chaos.
Yes.
So, you know, we want to apply some logic and we want to know that it's going to be a boy or a girl and this is why and this is how
exactly,
my pregnancy is going to be because this and that.
Tick, tick,
And it's like, well, it'll be...
I remember wearing those bands, you know, travel sickness bands.
Yeah.
And a friend who's very anti all alternative medicine sort of saying something a bit mocking and I just said, I'm desperate, okay? I'm desperate. It's like, I'm not allowed to take any proper...
So this is what I'm doing.
I'm trying. I'm pressing my wrists and burping, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But if you felt like I felt, you would be doing the same thing. I'm not saying I'm suddenly,
I'm suddenly all
hippie
woman. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if I was,
just trying,
and it makes it better,
then... exactly. Even if it's a placebo.
Yeah.
Leave me be.
Exactly.
And then, the second baby... Although that was the one where we ended up in not the intensive care, but the next one, special care, for a week, and that is hands down the worst week of my life.
Yeah.
But actually, he was much easier as a baby, you know, from day one.
Yeah.
Some of that is about me giving up breastfeeding earlier because that was agonising.
Yeah.
But also, I think he was just a cheerier baby. I don't know about you. I had. I have been told all of my life what a terrible baby I was. And actually, weirdly, it does get to you a bit. You sort of feel like a bit like,
what
can I do? But they're clearly angry and I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the weird, so I didn't want to do that to my daughter. So what I say to my daughter is, you hated being a baby. That's all it was. You just hated being a baby. And she quite likes that.
Yeah,
because it gives her a bit of agency. It's like, that was my personality.
Yes, exactly.
I just hate being a baby. Whereas... my son loved being a baby. He was just having the time of his life from day one. He's a bit of a changeling, though, because he comes from the rest of my family are all, you know, intense and anxious. And he's
just a
jolly, bumbling idiot.
I remember talking to you.
I've got to stop saying he's an idiot. This is the second
podcast
I've called him an
idiot.
But I sort of think, what if he's listening to this? And, you know,
I
don't think you're an idiot, Tom.
I was talking to Danielle Ward, in fact, after watching The Half, which was a play that Margaret was in, which was very excellent and brilliant at the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah.
And she was talking about her daughter, who was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she reckons in a way that makes her more chilled as a parent because she thinks...
It's nothing
compared to what it was or what it could have been or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of... And she knew from early on didn't tell other people's stories, she knew that there was a problem early on and waiting to have this birth, and then the baby was going to have to, have an operation and whatever. And I was just thinking, after that, anything's, you survive on no sleep at all and just be just delighted that your baby's thriving and whatever. Whereas I was a bit spoilt and was just like, who is this?
So what happened with Tom?
Do you know, it's really interesting because I was listening to Fergus's episode of this and he was talking about how the doctors would say or would fire acronyms and numbers at him and he would sort of stand there blankly and that was exactly the same with us. And I do know of other people who go the opposite way and read up a lot on everything that could possibly happen and ask intelligent questions. And Dan and I basically stood in front of doctors looking blank and then saying, when can we take him home? That was the only thing. It's like, is he all right? Is he going to... And I remember one of the doctors saying, you're not... We thought you were going to be able to take him home today, but you're not. And I burst into tears. And she was super surprised. And I was like, this is weird. Why is she surprised? Because I think for her it was just, the baby's not in any real danger. Yeah. What's the issue? But it doesn't feel like that. And it's just, I just spent the whole time going, I just want to... to take, I sort of wanted to steal him, disconnect him from all of his little wires and stuff, which is ridiculous because he's, the thing that people always say is they're in the best place, they're in the best place, and they absolutely are. But you don't want them there; you want them at home with you,
And it is really, I mean, I had nothing compared to this, but we had to go back into hospital because Zach lost loads of weight because I couldn't breastfeed and blah, blah. And I remember him just being, and I thought of you so much because Zach and Tom are about a year apart. Mm. So it was literally the year before. And I think maybe you just shared something on Facebook about
I did
what
on the anniversary,
happened.
Yeah.
Well, the anniversary was just before Zach was born.
You're right.
So it was really uppermost in my mind.
I'm sorry.
No, it was really good because it was, it's that awful thing where you think, gosh, I'm so sorry I didn't connect with that at that, it's completely beyond my understanding at that point. And then suddenly I thought, God, imagine how awful that would have been. And we went back into hospital and he was, I remember him just sort of, little sort of lying there while the doctor was just, trying to take his blood pressure and all that kind of stuff. And I just started weeping, like absolutely weeping, because it was all about feeding and I'd let him down in that way, hormones and all that kind of stuff. And I remember a midwife just picking him up and he was just in a nappy and just pulling my T-shirt out and then putting him under my T-shirt so that we were, and it was just that amazing intuitive thing, which is just like, and her... getting the fact, just getting that fact, which is like, that's what you need. Mm. And you can't put that into words.
No.
But you're just like, the best place for my baby, right? I mean, obviously the best place is to be in the care, with the care, but actually in your heart and your brain, the best place is to be just completely with you and close to you.
Yeah.
And that must be really
because
hard.
Because the parents... the parents... that were in there, that the babies that were worse off, that were in sort of boxes, and watching the parents they have special gloves that they put on and change the nappy in this sort of box. And I remember watching that and thinking how brave people are and how, but that's what you're doing, what you're doing for your child. And we were, it was hilarious. Nothing's hilarious in that place, but my son was 8 pounds, so he was enormous. People kept bringing him, baby grows from their tiny things, going, he's not going to fit in that. So it sort of felt quite nice. And also I think it was sepsis or it was suspected sepsis. I'm not sure we ever quite got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I only found that out because I looked at the notes ages later and was and I said to Dan, do you know Tom had sepsis? And he was like, yeah, I do remember that. You'd think it would be something that you remember.
But it was just...
It was just every day.
You couldn't take
I wasn't
him home.
Allowed to, and I was having to rush back and forth and sleep in this little room and sleep in the room with the phone by my head so that when it rang, they'd say, he needs feeding, and I would rush through the corridors to go and, yeah. It's quite good. It's like a superhero.
But also what makes that hard, in a weird way, is it was your second, so you knew that this wasn't actually how it, it should, in inverted commas, be, you know.
No, but weirdly, I did just keep thinking, oh, my God, I don't know what I'd have done if this was my first.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I wasn't that great as it was, but I just think I'd have been a total mess. I mean, I was terrified with my first for months, if not. Yeah, months, let's say. You know, I was much, much more casual with... Once Tom had come home from the hospital, I was absolutely fine with him.
So, yeah.
He'll just slot in with whatever we're doing. It's fine.
Yeah.
Spooky Halloween!
What is the best bit of advice that anyone ever gave you?
Well, it sort of just came up with your story about the midwife. My GP, who I loved, not only because when I told her I was pregnant, she said, you can have a glass of wine. And I said, what, a week? And she said, no, a night. Which my midwife did not agree with. But I was like, listen, that is a medical diagnosis.
Trumps you, love.
So, exactly. It's like my friend's French doctor who said, oh, you can drink wine as long as it is a
very good
vintage.
Wine. Yeah.
So French, it's brilliant. She said, and she's a GP, brilliant, brilliant GP. She said, I never, ever ignore a mother's intuition.
Right.
And I think she'd mean parents as well, you know, whatever. But she says, if you think there's something wrong and you come in and you're a bit vague about it, I will still pay attention to what you're saying and work it out. Because as much as you're anxious and whatever, you know, and actually just feeling listened to is huge,
it's part of
isn't it? And obviously, I thought my baby was jaundiced and I'd just given her too many carrots. But so I don't know where that falls on the intuition thing. But generally, I think, and it's nice because it, it just makes you feel like you're not mental, even though you feel mental a lot of early motherhood.
Yeah, oh, God.
Yeah.
And what's the worst bit of advice anyone's ever given you?
Oh, God. It's hard, isn't it? Because I actually think I block a lot of it out. I think, and it actually it's not really given to me, but that whole you just keep breastfeeding through whatever. I've heard so many horror stories. Like my little sister was feeding her baby blood. And they, you know, it wasn't until she went to her GP and her GP told
what
her this
and
said, you're not, you know, your nipples are so bad. And
do you know what, this is a very common thing, isn't it?
And I don't want to be, I'm not anti-breastfeeding at all.
No, God.
But
come on.
Yeah,
like
but come on.
But so many people
there
can't
are some obsessives.
Do it.
Yeah.
And
that's
also
not a failing, and it's not you not trying hard enough.
No.
Sometimes it's not going to work. And that's,
I think the assumption is if you don't breastfeed, it's because you can't be arsed.
Yeah,
and actually, most of the
lazy,
time, the stress you probably put yourself and your baby through in trying to get there is so much that you undo the marginal benefits it has over bottle feeding in the first place.
Yeah.
You know.
And I did both. I did. I breastfed Amy for over a year.
Wow.
Yeah, which was amazing. But and then Tom, not quite 6 weeks,
right?
Because it was agonising, and they couldn't work out whether it was ductal thrush or a bad latch. Either way, it was too agonising, and Dan ended up saying, "I'm not watching you do this anymore." And I stopped. So I've done both. I feel like I'm a proper expert just because I have done both. But weirdly, you know, people worry about bonding. I bonded better with my son, and this might be heresy, but I began to associate my daughter with restriction and pain, and you know, it was like being forced to stay in, and you know, that's my issue, and obviously she is my darling daughter, and you know, obviously not her fault at all.
But
I think that there's an interesting thing there where, if it doesn't come naturally, you know, if you do feel trapped by it, then that's not a good thing.
That's not going to have a positive outcome.
Yeah. And the whole mental health issue.
Yeah.
You need to be able to. When Dan came home, the first day I managed to get out with Amy and go and see my family for lunch, he was like, "Oh my God, you're like a different person," and that's me.
Yeah.
And you can try and be a version of the mother that you think you should be.
Yeah.
But actually, sometimes you have to admit this is what I thrive on.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I'll tell you what the worst advice I had.
Yeah.
It was, you have to decide what sort of parent you're going to be. Yeah. What fucking bullshit is that? Like, an attachment parent.
Oh, I see.
You know, one of those. And frankly, whatever gets you through the day and night,
and it'll be different.
You can read bits. You know, I'm not saying, oh, I ignored everything. You know,
no.
Of course, I read bits and pieces and people gave me advice and I listened to some of it.
Yeah.
But we're all just mixing and matching and just getting through the day, aren't we? You know. So I had a sling and a buggy.
Like,
I didn't go, right, this is what my child needs, and therefore
also it's
I'll
like
do that.
Saying it, but there are books also about your baby and sort of saying, you know, there was one which was, there are six different types of baby. There's angel baby.
Oh, my
there's
God.
Whatever baby. There's.
I've gone busy with rage.
Yeah, and I remember someone recommending this book, and I read it, and it was sort of late at night, and I said to David, I think Zach is an angel baby, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he went, what? I was like, and he was like, right, wake up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Fucking pull yourself together. Yeah. This is insane. He's a human being.
Yes, exactly. It's just a human being
and
that
so
you're
are you.
Looking
yeah.
after.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, God. Oh, God, it just makes me so angry. And I get it. Again, it's that thing of saying, we just want some answers. You want something to go, E equals X, Y, sleeps
yes,
for eight
exactly,
hours.
Exactly.
You know, and
it
just doesn't work like that. And some things will miraculously work for you. But I remember early on, we didn't have space for a cot in our bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as Amy was big enough to go into a cot rather than the Moses basket, we put her into her own room. And it was at mm-hmm. 5 months, which is a month before the World Health Organization.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, my health visitor said, well, she should be in the room with you. And I said, well, you know, she can't fit in her Moses basket anymore.
Yeah.
So we put her in next door. And she said, and then she just sort of made a note. But it was at that point that I thought, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine, even if I'm not doing the correct thing.
Yes.
They're not going to say, well, we're going to send social services to inspect your...
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, oh, no, you are allowed to make
child.
Different choices.
Yeah, exactly.
And the World Health Organization, that's the whole world that they're trying to get the average of and whatever. It's not...
Yeah.
You know, it's not a definitive...
Health visitors can seriously go fuck themselves, sorry. Oh, my God, I had such a bad experience with them. But yeah,
I had a health visitor, and this is awful. But I said, "Do you have children of your own?" And she said, "This poor woman," and she was delightful, I have to say, on the whole fuck health visitor thing. She was absolutely delightful, and we'd been having a nice time. So you know, I was trying to initiate a chat with her, which I wouldn't normally do. And she said, "My sister died, and I've just taken in her two children."
Oh.
And it was really interesting because my reaction—I almost wanted to just march her out of the door because I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, "No, I'm sorry, I'm not listening.
I can't deal with this right now."
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was thinking, "Oh, this is interesting. I'm much more empathetic usually." I mean, I didn't do that,
but I
was just so fragile anyway. I thought, "No, you can't break me." With such an upsetting story.
Gosh. I remember the first one we had didn't have a particularly good bedside manner.
Oh.
And she was the first time she came around and she just said, and she's just like staring at a clipboard and going,
"Do you feel like you cannot cope? Do you feel like you cannot continue?"
And I was like touching her knee going, "I haven't got postnatal depression." Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't need to rattle this off like a kind of... Like it's like something you've got to tick on a list. It's like, if I did have that, I would respond to eye contact.
Yes, exactly.
You know, a bit of
kindness.
Just like a conversation rather than you reading a list of
shouting
on a form.
At things
shouting
that are clearly
off
designed
yeah.
to find that stuff out. I had an amazing, the male midwife I had, luckily this was second time around, so again, I knew a bit more. But he said, with Dan in the room, he said, is this the baby's father? And I was like, yes, but obviously I would say that, wouldn't I? Because he's sitting here. Which point, he didn't laugh. And then And then he said, and are you suffering from domestic abuse? And I said, again?
Again.
He's sitting next to me, so you better come up with a better system. But then my favourite, he said, and do you consider yourself disabled? And he really did say it like that. It really did sound like it was going to go, because we've all been, you know,
we've been talking about this for a while now.
And then, no. But I looked at that form later and he'd written down that I didn't speak English.
What?
Yeah, he was not. I actually ended up reporting him. He was so bad and didn't book me in for my next proper appointment and got a couple of key things wrong.
The moral of the story is men can't be midwives, I think.
Well, weirdly, he did seem to be a bit like, oh, it's just a bit beneath me, this stuff.
Because he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's like, anyway, we won't go down that road. So would you ever get either of your children involved in performing or...
Well, I really don't want them to. It's weird. I have a real aversion to it. But at the same time, I have to remember that it was the thing that fed me. You know, it was my absolute passion for so long. So I can't be that person and say, no, you're not going into it. And Amy goes to a comedy club, you know, a school of comedy club.
Great.
And loves it. And I was sent an email on the first day saying, Amy's literally incredible at this. not even humble brag. Yeah. But also... Tom, when he was 18 months old, I think, did the... Tom Tuck runs a Totally Tom, I think it's called, club.
I think that's another sketch group.
Oh, yes,
think
no,
it's
you're
called
right.
Totally
what
Tom.
Is it called? It's called... Anyway, he runs a club where only people called Tom can get up on stage.
Yeah.
And I took Tom Tetzel to this grim Edinburgh bar. And I think he was given a bit of pint, but yeah.
I've definitely seen a photo of him.
Yes, it's really annoying. I asked someone to video it and her camera ran out, so we never saw it. He didn't really say anything, but the best bit was Tom gave it, after not really saying anything at all, because he was tiny, Tom Tuck handed him £1, said, everybody gets a fee here. And Tom just took it and very sweetly turned to me and handed it to me. And I said, I'm his agent. And I got a big laugh and then we were like, thank you very much. I mean, and they're screwed basically, aren't they, my children? No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no chance.
Thank you so much to Margaret Caborn-Smith for coming in to talk to me. She mentioned near the end there something called School of Comedy, which is a brilliant thing if you have, I think, sort of pre-teen type age, maybe early teen, pre-teen, early teen type age kids. I think there's one in Chiswick and one in Lymington, which is in Dorset. And if you live nearby, or even if you live vaguely nearby, I think they are really tremendous things. So really fun and silly. And they actually had a TV show a few years ago. Look it up, schoolofcomedy.com. Next week, I say next week, I mean next 2 weeks, next fortnight. But let's just say next time. I will be speaking to Sarah Soleimani, who is most recently... best known for her role in Bridget Jones' Baby as the sassy sort of newsreader best friend person, and is currently writing on Bill Hader's comedy Barry, which has won a shitload of awards. So she'll be talking to us from La La Land down the line in perfect quality. So at ease, radiophiles. Anyway, until then, I hope you have a good and fun and sleep-filled time.
Bye-bye.